When the Rocks Cry Out. Hi, this is Carl Kosar from the School of Theology at Walla Walla College. Welcome to Probe, our weekly radio program that explores biblical and theological topics that are central to our Christian faith. Today we continue in our series entitled Thy Word is a Lamp unto My Feet, the Bible for Today. To help us explore this important subject, I've invited two of my colleagues to join me in the discussion, Dr. Bruce Johansson, Professor of Biblical Studies, and Dr. Dave Thomas, the Dean of the School of Theology at Walla Walla College. Welcome, gentlemen, and thank you for joining me.
Thank you, Carl.
When the rocks cry out, people of faith have always been interested in the search and alleged discovery of holy relics dating back to Bible times. And this can go back to the mother of Constantine the Great, who went to Jerusalem in search of archaeological evidence. But even people like Adolf Hitler, the madman Führer of Germany, who joined the fray by claiming to have in his possession the spear that pierced Jesus' side. In contrast to such extravagant and highly dubious claims, I should say, modern-day archaeologists have become, archaeology has become an official field of scientific study that's discovered many fascinating discoveries over the years. But the first question as we come to this issue of archaeology in the Bible, Philemon, do you think, are there limits to what archaeology can do for us? What do you think?
I grew up at a time when I can remember presentations by evangelists and others that archaeology proves the Bible is true. Hmm. And I sat there amazed and was really, you know, taken by it.
Encouraged
by it, okay. Yes, mm-hmm. Very much. Mm-hmm. And at that time, though, I hadn't really thought through what do we mean by truth. Is historical truth the same as theological truth? And I have to say that after a while I began to have some misgivings about this. Yes, archaeology certainly does. It lays out, it helps us to understand the background, the world in which the biblical events took place. But it certainly can't prove whether God came actually to Abraham. We have to discuss what do we mean by true.
And maybe what we mean by prove as well, right?
And prove, exactly.
Yeah, I think that I think this is an area where we as Christians need to be very careful because, you know, the whole archaeological movement burst on the Christian scene, 100 and some years ago,
mm-hmm. Yes.
Because people, in the face of biblical criticism, wanted an extra means of proving the yes. veracity of the Bible. And so Christians spent a lot of money going over to the Middle East and digging around and have to, you know, in an attempt to prove all the particulars of the Bible. And, you know, I think it's fair to say at this point that we have been unable to do that. Archaeology has not done that. Archaeology has raised a lot of questions as much as it has offered some solutions.
I would say yes and perhaps no a little bit. I think in the sense that archaeology has proved, for example, that the Ninevites existed.
Mm-hmm.
It has proved, you know, the historical world in which the Bible lived.
Yeah.
Early Christians, 100 years ago, Christians were very excited in the face of accusations from higher critics who said, the Bible's just fables. None of this happened. The Babylonians didn't exist.
Yeah.
So it has proven.
Yeah, and there have been some notable victories. I mean,
yes.
You think of finding the stones in Babylon that have Nebuchadnezzar's name
yes.
on it, and
mm-hmm.
even I think now Belshazzar's name found. So,
mm-hmm.
so I'm not suggesting that archaeology has had no benefit. What I'm saying is that I think we must be careful not to think that the archaeology, if we just dig over there enough, that we'll be able to prove every particular of the Bible. That's what I sense people right. were hoping to achieve.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I think the achievement of archaeology is much greater, much broader than that, in that we now have established some things without a doubt.
Yes.
We have a much better understanding of ancient times, and therefore our biblical knowledge has grown enormously, but we have not been able to prove every little thing in the Bible by digging in this place or that.
No.
It's almost like if you were doing a painting, it provided for us a wonderful background.
Yeah.
But actually, the people themselves and their experience with God is something that's theological. That's beyond, you know, a rock telling us that you know, Jesus is divine. I mean, that's the message of faith.
Or Jesus walked here.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's no more footprints in the sand.
Yeah.
They've disappeared.
Yeah. But it is very encouraging, though, when you do come to an archaeological discovery that has a significant impact on the Bible. You mentioned last week, Carl, about the Dead Sea Scrolls, which... You know, although it's interesting that for 50 years people have debated that back and forth and haven't, you know, it wasn't until recently that somebody actually published the scrolls.
Yes.
You know, they've all been under private scrutiny.
Very controversial, yes.
But how have those strengthened the belief in the Bible?
Well, they've done a number of things, the Dead Sea Scrolls. I mean, probably their greatest benefit, of course these are always debated, at least the greatest benefit for me, is that it's actually confirmed that the actual words we have in the Old Testament have been transmitted accurately through the centuries.
Yeah.
With 98%, that's really pretty good. There's a place here or there where there's a word we may say, well, is this goat or is this something else, you know, lamb, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah.
But as far as, you know, the whole message of Scripture.
Very clear there. Very carefully preserved.
And it's also given us, the Dead Sea Scrolls, a picture of the world that Jesus lived in. We, you know, find this issue of nature, the terminology of the sons of light versus the sons of darkness, and you know, that sounds like the Gospel of John in many places. So we kind of get, you know, terminology, world picture, world view that's similar. Of course, Christianity is a much different message.
Let me put it this way: I don't think archaeology brings people to faith. I think people of faith find confirmation
in
archaeology.
So that it's not coercive. The evidence of archaeology
is not
coercive.
It's certainly not coercive.
That belief still comes by other means.
Yeah, it comes by other means. And as a person of faith, I love to have archaeological backgrounds that help me understand Scripture better.
Mm-hmm.
I'll throw one out here, and that is just looking at epitaphs, gravestones, around the time when Paul wrote and when Jesus lived. You look at them in the Greek world. And we always think that, you know, all these Greeks, they were all Platonists. They believed in immortality and reincarnation and all that kind of stuff. Actually, when you read those, you find out that the man in the street didn't think there was anything beyond this life.
It's all over.
It's all over. And it helps me understand when Paul goes to Thessalonica and the Thessalonians, some of their members start to die after they've received the message.
Oh, yeah.
They think they're lost.
Done.
They think they're done. It's over. They couldn't understand the resurrection message. Didn't it might have happened to Jesus, but will it be for us? And so Paul has to spend a whole section there.
And aren't we glad he put that in there?
Oh my, yeah. You know, just little stuff like that. I think and the appeal of the Christian message of hope of resurrection to people who believe there's nothing after this life.
Yes.
That helps.
And I think that goes back to what we talked about even last week in our discussion, where with the, you know, is the Bible reliable? And well, we said yes, it speaks to us as people. And once again, if our faith is going to be based on, you know, the latest, you know, discovery here or there, and then it's a pretty shaky faith.
It's up and down. It'll depend on which archaeological expert you're listening to.
And who interprets the evidence. So, for me, it still resides in, you know, the fact is, archaeology can encourage me as a believer as it gives me a better picture of the world that Jesus lived in.
Yeah.
Carl, you made a note of some very interesting archaeological finds like the ossuary of Caiaphas.
It's a fascinating discovery. It took place in 1992 when they were building a water park in Jerusalem, and the floor caved in on them, and they found an ancient burial tomb with a number of what we call ossuaries, these bone boxes that were kind of the latest rage in funeral, you know, items in Jesus' day. And as they went through this, they discovered a number of these bone boxes, some of them destroyed, but one that was very elaborate, one of the most elaborate, you know, very highly decorated ossuaries. And inside it, they found a number of bones where they would, what they would do with these bone boxes, they would, after the person would be laid out and the body would, you know, deteriorate, they'd eventually take the bones because space was limited, put them in a bone box. And they found a number of bones, but on the side of this box was you know, etched in that this was the name Joseph, son of Caiaphas, was written on it. And, of course, we know the name Caiaphas.
Oh, yeah.
And so archaeologists were excited, and as they did some, you know, bone testing on the bones, they actually discovered that these bones would have been a man who was around 65, a man who had some degree of authority to have this kind of a bone box.
Oh, yeah.
And scholars today, whether you talk about liberal or conservative, believe that this is probably the bones of the Caiaphas we find in the New Testament.
That's amazing.
That's amazing.
It is amazing.
I find that confirming.
Very much confirming.
And
does that make me a believer? No. But as a believer, it encourages me and says, you know, here's just another piece.
Yeah.
Other discoveries, though.
Yeah, there was that the one about the Galilee boat that actually made news. That was a very interesting one. It was because of a drought.
1986.
Yeah.
A drought up at the Sea of Galilee. What did they find?
A boat that could... how many people could fit into such a boat?
Oh, it was a number 12 or more. I mean, it was a boat for a group of men who could use to go out fishing, and
that really gets your imagination going, doesn't it?
And they did that, the carbon dating and so forth. And this boat comes right back to the first century.
Did it have Peter's name on it?
Yeah. No. We don't know if this is Jesus' boat. I mean, if it was Jesus' boat, it probably wasn't good because it sunk. So, but just another boat. I mean, which is exciting because it just gives us another insight of the realness we find of Scripture. But there's more discoveries. Perhaps, Bruce, you want to mention?
Well, there's the crucified man. I hadn't seen this before we got ready for this probe setting, and evidently they found a man. The first discovery of a man who was crucified.
This was amazing. You think, you look at literature, there are thousands of references to people being crucified.
Yeah.
But not until 1968, they had never found the remains of someone that was crucified.
Mm-hmm.
And here in a bone box, they found the bones of a crucified man. I say, how would you know a man was crucified? Turned out that what had happened was that this man had been crucified, a man in his 20s, and we know his name because it's on the box. His name was John.
Huh.
That when they had crucified this young man, they had driven the spike through his ankles. And when it went through, it apparently hit a knot in the wood that was so tough, it bent the spike back. Hmm. And so when they went to remove him to take it off, it wouldn't come out. And so by studying the bones, we know what the soldiers did. They didn't work with that spike. They simply took an axe and hacked off his leg, and then put his leg in there. And so we still have that spike that's in there.
Wow.
So it tells us a lot, about the nature of crucifixion, and we could see what the soldiers would have done to Jesus,
Wow. And what about the Pontius Pilate inscription? That's interesting because people debated whether this man ever existed.
Yes.
Very interesting. And the fact, a couple things on this, Pontius Pilate, this was... describes him as Pontius Pilate, the prefect of Judea. And the very fact it's a prefect, this would be like the military commander. There's actually a change in terminology that's used in early New Testament time with governors. And this would actually date to the time when Pontius Pilate, that's according to Scripture, was actually the governor of Judea.
Yeah.
And here we found an inscription with his name on it. So, once again, I mean, it almost sends, chills through my spine. You know, it doesn't make me a believer, but it just says, once again,
it corroborates it.
Very much so. And just amazed at what archaeology can do to encourage faith.
So we should believe the Bible because of its message more than for its historical details.
Yes.
I think so.
Absolutely.
But when the historical details are there, it really is a good aid.
For the broad picture,
comforting.
Yes. These stories happen, they are true, and is faith
comforting and inspiring.
Very much so.
Yeah. And also, I like the fact that it increases our understanding enormously, that the depth of knowledge about ancient times has grown a lot.
God is so good. Well, gentlemen, I'd like to thank you again, Dr. Bruce Johansson and Dr. Dave Thomas, for joining me today, and always to Susan Michael for technical assistance, and to you, our listeners of Probe. Please join us next week as we continue this most important topic. For Probe, I'm Carl Kosar.
You've been listening to Probe, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla College and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194 or email us at probe@wwc.edu. Thanks for listening. We'll be here next week at this time with Probe.